Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Klass as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind from HowStuffWorks.com.
What seems to be the problem?
So the thing is, Doctor, I am dead.
You're dead? Well, can you explain?
I'm dead. My organs have stopped working. They've ceased to function. My heart, my intestines, my brain.
But you're speaking to me right now.
Well, I agree. I don't know how to explain that. I guess I should be quiet. But I need to be put in a grave.
I'm registering a heartbeat, a pulse. You're certainly breathing.
No, I think you're just getting the sound of air moving through the empty skin.
Empty?
I guess except for the bones. Everything else feels like it's gone. It's rotten, melted away.
Well, if this were the case, you wouldn't be able to think or reason or even travel to my office and tell me these things.
Something isn't letting me die.
Something?
Not God, I mean. Not God, but something. Anyway, Doctor, I need you to destroy my body, if that's possible.
Hey, welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind. My name is Robert Lamb.
And my name is Joe McCormick. And that is an odd scenario that most doctors probably would never find themselves in. But it is actually not just a fictional contrivance. There have been scenarios where a doctor has had someone show up at their office claiming not that they're dying, but that they are dead.
Yes. Yeah. And it would be comedic if the examples of it, the actual case studies, weren't so depressing and heartbreaking, and the condition itself were not so real.
Yeah. So this is going to be the subject of today's episode. What it's like to experience being dead while still being alive.
Yes. It is, sometimes referred to as, Cotard's syndrome.
Also Cotard's delusion.
Yeah. And I think delusion is more accurate based on the commentaries we've been reading, the idea that this is not a a specific affliction so much as kind of an array of symptoms that emerges from a few different conditions that can occur neurologically.
So let's go back into history. Where do we first see this emerging, the concept of someone who presents to a doctor claiming to be dead, yet from the outside they're obviously alive?
Well, it's an interesting question. And some of the individuals who have tackled it have certainly pointed to examples in myth and legend and saying, well, this could possibly explain these scenarios. However, it seems to be that the earliest case of Cotard's delusion, even though it was not known as Cotard's delusion yet, possibly goes back to 1788. And this is when Genevan naturalist and philosophical writer Charles Bonnet encountered what might be the earliest example of the condition. And this was a 70-year-old, otherwise healthy woman who, upon experiencing something like a stroke, and this was after a draught of air hit her in the neck, according to the studies.
I read the same thing there. She reported a draught of air.
Hit her in the neck, okay. And then she felt like a paralysis across half her body.
Yeah.
And then she was silent as a corpse for 4 days. And then when she opened her mouth finally, she demanded burial.
That is a strange thing to demand.
Yeah. Yeah, like I say, it would be comedic if it weren't so serious.
So she seemed to be under the real persistent idea that she was no longer alive, even while she was alive to tell people this.
Yeah. Yeah. She apparently, you know, is just very insistent of it. Like it was very much like a delusion, like something, again, that the individual that's believing it is it completely invested in it, completely convinced of this reality, no matter how ridiculous it might seem to anyone on the outside. It's like she became agitated and she was scolding her friends for not doing as she asked. She said, I'm not alive anymore. I need to be buried. They ended up calling a doctor. Eventually everybody thought it was necessary to dress her like a corpse and lay her out to calm her down. And,
they actually had a sort of funeral for her.
Yeah.
Right?
Like they essentially had to indulge in her, delusion a bit just to calm her down. And she eventually, fell asleep and was undressed and put to bed. But yeah, how do you even treat something like this? Certainly in 1788. Well, Bonnet arrived on the scene and he treated her with, quote, powder of precious stones mixed with opium. And I guess it worked because he reported that she emerged from her death delusion. But while she gave up the notion that she was dead, she then became convinced that she was in Norway with her daughter while she was actually in Copenhagen the whole time and insisted that she needed to return to Copenhagen from Norway. And during this time, she was otherwise normal, but she could not sleep without the opium. So sadly, she ended up suffering the same condition every 3 months thereafter. So
you mean a reprisal of the idea that she had already died?
Right. The idea that she had died would return. She'd have to be talked out of it. And then she would register surprise when she finally learned that she was, in fact, alive.
Now, I wonder what it's like. Like, what is the behavior of a person who truly believes themselves to be dead? Like, what does that entail for how they act?
Well, it seems to vary from case to case as we look at it. I mean, a lot of it seems to boil down to just an essential breakdown in conception of self and identity. Mm-hmm. Instead of like we all walk around through our lives with a de facto statement, I am alive. And, you know, maybe being alive is fantastic. Maybe it's not. But we at least begin the sentence with, I am alive.
Yeah. It's sort of an axiom.
Yeah.
Like you don't need to debate this point.
But for them, the axiom is vacant. It's absent. And in its place, I am dead. I'm clearly not alive. I must be dead. And then therefore, X. Sometimes that X is clearly I must be buried or my body must be destroyed or in some cases, it's I'm not alive, and yet I exist. Perhaps I have entered some deathless state.
Yeah,
perhaps
some afterlife.
Yeah, some afterlife, et cetera. So it kind of varies depending on what's going on. The underlying conditions that are causing these symptoms come into play, as well as presumably the exact worldview of the individual afflicted.
Yeah, another thing that I've read about in many of the cases here is a sort of denial of life-sustaining activities. Like the person seems to, in many cases, lose interest in eating and going about their business as one normally would and doing any of the things that would constitute a life going on.
Yeah, sleeping, et cetera. Authors Hans Forstel and Barbara Beetz wrote about the Binet case for the British Journal of Psychiatry in 1992. And they theorized that the idea of imminent death played a role in this too. The idea of imminent death during the old woman's stroke overpowered her thoughts, at least until she regained full consciousness. So
like while she was having a stroke, she had the idea that she was dying. And then in some sort of liminal state following the stroke, she had not yet overcome the conclusion of that assumption.
Yeah. I mean, because like if the last experience you have with like a full consciousness and a full conception of self is that of, oh crap, I'm about to die. Oh crap, something horrible is happening to my body. Mm-hmm. And then the next phase you exist in is this altered phase in which some of your normal neural processes are adjusted. That may be the explanation you fall back on. That at least is one theory. Here's a quote from what they had to say. The most exceptional and strange ideas can gain such acceptance if the mind is suddenly thrown from its ordinary reasoning and forced into a new main idea. A sudden physical disorder in the brain or a sudden violent excitement can cause such a change that we are pushed beyond insight into its unreasonable nature because we assume to notice a correct functioning of our imagination even in delusion. Which I love that because I think one of the things that's fascinating about delusions such as this with other neurological conditions is that it not only illustrates what is possible in terms of human perception of reality, but also how ultimately ephemeral the quote unquote normal perception of reality actually is.
Well, yeah. And it also, I think, underlies our inherent predisposition for a completely irrational thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Like, obviously, I don't mean this as an indictment of people suffering from Cotard's delusion. I'm not trying to impugn their rationality.
Mm-hmm.
But this seems to be a thing that's latent in the human brain, the ability to hold thoughts that are impossible.
Right.
Because in a strange way, this is perhaps the most delusional possible thought, like from a Cartesian point of view. And what I mean by that is, you know, so René Descartes was trying to come up with an axiom that he could start his deductive philosophy with, right? And so he could start with like, well, I observe that I'm in a room, but then you can't actually start with observations according to him because there's no way you can be certain you're not hallucinating every aspect of your surroundings. But Descartes eventually said, you know what? I can start with cogito ergo sum. I think, therefore, I exist. Because, I mean, it's pretty much that is true by definition. It cannot be false. So this syndrome is kind of some form of the denial of the Cartesian axiom. It's denying the thing that could not by definition be false. I think, but I do not exist.
Yeah, in this it would be the ultimate denial, the ultimate nihilism, right?
Yeah,
and indeed, this is some of the thinking that the namesake French neurologist Jules Cotard had as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, this is where we get the name. Obviously, the year was 1880,
so it's about 100 years after the original case.
Yeah, and it wasn't until later that people pieced that together. He received a most curious patient, okay? A 43-year-old woman who believed she had no brain, nerves, chest, or entrails. She believed she was merely skin and bones and that, quote, neither God nor the devil existed and that she no longer required food as she was, quote, eternal and would live forever. So she requested to be burned alive and attempted suicide several times thereafter and then eventually died of starvation. So this is a pretty severe and grim case.
Well, so what did Cotard make of this?
Well, he initially saw it as an extreme form of hypochondriasis, you know, hypochondriacs.
Yeah.
And he thought that this would occur during a severe psychotic depression.
And in many cases, this delusion has been linked strongly to depression. Not in every case, because there are a lot of different scenarios that seem to produce similar effects and delusions, but
we do see that as a recurring factor, along with like near death or some traumatic experience.
But it has been often linked to severe types of depression.
Mm-hmm. And he indeed is one that mentioned that tales of the wandering Jew might be related bits of myth that extend from such bouts.
So he's thinking that cultural ideas, like not just the hardware of the brain malfunctioning, but that software running on the brain, you know, received ideas are informing this syndrome. Or, sorry, shouldn't say syndrome, the delusion.
Well, or at least that, like, these ideas of, say, that there being an immortal, depressed wanderer out there in the world might have some ties to this condition, that this might be the nugget of truth behind such a concept.
Right. If you're not familiar, the concept of the wandering Jew is the idea that, of course, in the New Testament, Christ predicts that he will return to earth before everyone standing before him has passed away. Obviously, a lot of time has passed, and so one solution to this textual problem is that people assumed that at least one person standing there listening to Jesus was actually essentially immortal and had continued to wander the earth since then.
Yeah, essentially cursed because in some tellings, the wandering Jew laughed at Christ on the cross.
Oh, I don't think I'd heard that
variation. That's the version I ran across recently. So it's kind of like Highlander, except more anti-Semitic.
Hmm.
So in Cotard's later writings on the condition, he described it as a nihilistic delusion, a negation of everything, God, food, life itself, quote, a marked tendency to deny everything.
Well, then in this case, it would seem that the way that we originally characterized it as the belief that one is dead is actually not the overarching nature of this, but it's sort of like one expression of it. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, as Cotard conceived it, it's just a denial of everything, and the denial of one's own continuing life is one facet of that.
Right. Yeah. If this absolute denial enters your consciousness, then even if it's an altered consciousness, then how do you make sense of it?
So I assume he didn't name this delusion after himself.
No. That wasn't until 1893. Emile Regis coined the term Cotard syndrome, and it was made famous by Jules Seglius, who himself thought that it was all a severe anxious melancholia rather than a distinct clinical condition. Now, of course, if it were just two cases, that wouldn't be much to go on, but of course there have been other cases of Cotard's delusion, which we'll get to right after this break.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
All right, we're back.
All right, so there have been more than just these two historical cases we talked about, but it also is not an extremely common condition, right?
Yeah, it's exceedingly rare, and perhaps even more so in the modern age, since swift treatment of the underlying psychotic disorder typically occurs. And most studies related to Kattar's delusion are, of course, about a single patient. This is not the kind of thing where a doctor is going to encounter multiple Kattar's delusion patients, say, within, you know, within the course of an entire lifetime.
Right. Like, here's this one clinical encounter, not like, I recruited a group of 100 people suffering from Kattar's delusion.
Right. Yeah. It's this is, you know, one of those conditions that's super rare, probably, but it gets more attention because it is so alarming. In fact, some of you, I know we have some Hannibal fans out there. There was actually an episode of Hannibal where we had the sort of killer character of the week was somebody with Kattar's syndrome.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But I don't have a clear enough memory of the episode to do any kind of critiquing of it, of how they presented it.
Well, so now that we've seen more cases showing up throughout history, what are the most common symptoms? Like, how does this delusion present itself most frequently?
Claims of being dead, obviously, of organs missing or having rotten or melted away, claims of a missing brain.
Oh, yeah, I saw that one with the guy who said, I don't have a brain.
Yeah.
I don't know how to explain this, but I just don't have one.
Yeah. Claims, of course, of being... I didn't see any encounter where someone actually said, hey, I'm a zombie or I am a lich or something. Mm. But
they basically explain undeadness.
Yeah, they basically are like, I'm not alive, I'm dead, but I'm also in some sort of protected state, as if in some cases it's – there are a few cases we'll look at where the individual is saying, like, God won't let me die. But then other times they're just totally negating God or the devil as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, there's this sense of what – you know, what a Dungeons and Dragons a fan might term lichdom, the idea that you're not dead, you're not alive, but somehow death has given you either a cursed or elevated status.
Well, let's look at some more modern examples of what this actually looks like in people who present with it.
Okay. Well, one interesting case, and we're not going to touch on all of them, because even though it is rare, there have been multiple cases. Some of them just aren't particularly noteworthy or provide much illumination for our purposes here. But in 2004, there was a case of an individual by the name of Graham Harrison, and he attempted suicide by entering a bathtub with an electrical appliance. And the next thing he knew is he awoke in the hospital, and he thought he was dead. So in this we definitely see elements of the traumatic, like, occurrence, the near-death event.
Right.
And then waking up with this condition. And he was indeed diagnosed with Kattar's delusion. But most interestingly, given the time in which this took place in the hospital environment, it allowed doctors an unprecedented PET scan peek into the brain of the deathly deluded here.
Oh, so they could get some imaging results, see how the brain of a person experiencing this delusion looks compared to someone who's not.
Yeah, at least in this particular patient. Yeah, and they found that his brainwave patterns were vegetative despite his being awake. So he had very low metabolic activity across large areas of the frontal and parietal brain regions. Some of this expanse related to the default mode network, which we've covered before. This is the, you know, the constant chatter in your head that's, you know, questions about the and worries about the past and future, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But also the regions afflicted here were involved in formulating theory of mind.
Now, one of the researchers who worked on this case, who was interviewed in an article in New Scientist about it, Stephen Lauries of the University of Liège in Belgium, said that the PET scan results were essentially what you'd expect to see in someone who is asleep or under general anesthesia. like, you know, so you mentioned the low metabolism. Uh-huh. It was as if the brain had sort of been shut down. And however, the researchers also cautioned that this scan could be affected by the antidepressants he was taking. So, you know, we shouldn't draw too many conclusions from one case.
Right.
But apparently something had happened to his sense of self.
Yes, indeed. That's what's really interesting here. And that's what we're going to see reflected in some of the other cases we're going to look at. This idea that the brain's ability to conceive self and indeed to conceive the identity of others is what is afflicted here. Now, luckily, in the case of Harrison here, thanks to psychotherapy and drug treatment, he was eventually able to overcome these symptoms and return to something of a normal life. And there's actually an interview with him in New Scientist from a few years back. You can find it, Mindscape's First Interview with a Dead Man.
Yeah, and I was just going to say that it's an interesting read, worth checking out.
Now, in some of these papers, I found reference to an individual who wanted to erase their body with acid.
Oh, yeah.
But I wasn't able to track down a particular study on that one. But there were some other interesting cases that came up, one of which was a 2005 Iranian case covered in the article. This is a telling title, covered in the study, Coexistence of Lycanthropy and Cotard Syndrome in a Single Case.
Wait, lycanthropy? That's werewolf syndrome, isn't it?
Indeed, yeah. Something you don't really expect to pop up in a serious psychological paper.
Now, in the clinical definition, I think lycanthropy is what the belief that one has been transformed into an animal, or
right,
behaviors indicating such a belief.
Right. Yeah. So we're not talking about actual transformation into a wolf or a dog or what have you. This individual is a 32-year-old man who arrived at the hospital and complained, A, that he was dead, and B, that he had turned into a dog.
Both.
Yeah. And that the same was true of his wife and daughters.
Well, that I think he claimed that his wife had been turned into a dog and that his daughters, yes, had been turned into sheep.
That's right. So his delusion of zoological transformation extended to his family, but not necessarily the same animal.
Yeah.
Now, he claimed that his relatives had tried to poison him as well.
Yeah, I think by putting cyanide in his tea.
Well, that's one tactic to employ. And he also claimed that God protected him, even in this undead form, which is interesting. It ties back into this theme we see again and again, that they're dead, but somehow undying.
So what did the study conclude about this patient?
Well, here's the quote. A patient meeting a DSM-4 criteria for bipolar mood disorder, mixed type with psychotic feature, had the delusion of being transformed into a dog. He was also deluded that he was dead. He was restless and had a serious sense of guilt about a previous sexual contact with a sheep. Coexistence of lycanthropy and Cotard syndrome has not been reported before. In this patient, zoophilic orientation associated with a sense of guilt were concluded to be important factors causing his delusions.
So he had also like some guilt going on about a zoophilic encounter, essentially.
Yes, that's what the paper is getting at. So a rather disturbing case all around, I think everyone will agree. But it's interesting because we're seeing this delusion here in this case perhaps have causes that are less tied to physical trauma and more to just like severe guilt, severe psychological trauma over, mm-hmm, over a past incident. Matt Soniak has a great blog post about this at Matt Soniak, that's MattSoniak.com. And he adds that, quote, in Persian folklore, the dog is both a symbol of loyalty and a symbol of impureness. The man's sexual history with sheep, coupled with his desire to protect his sheep daughters and many dogs' roles as herders and protectors of flocks, adds another layer of paradox.
So this is another thing perhaps comparable to whether this assumption was correct or not. The original assumption of Cotard, that like the wandering Jew mythology could figure into the, mm-hmm, presentation of this delusion. Here it's saying like cultural ideas or beliefs or,
yeah,
sort of received associations can also play a role in how this delusion is manifest.
Because you have a condition that is causing these symptoms, and then the mind has to somehow make sense of the symptoms that it's working with. And for that, you often need to be able to, you have to call on cultural motifs or some sort of bit of mythology or some at least vague concept of what it means to not be yourself, what it means to not be alive.
Yeah. So a lot of the cases we've talked about so far are cases where the information we have comes from, in one case, at least an interview, but mostly from sort of clinical observations.
Right.
So researchers are looking at these patients and at the symptoms they're presenting and trying to describe them for the scientific literature. But I think it's also important to try to get a picture from people's own first-person perspective.
Oh, yeah.
So first of all, there's an article in the Washington Post in November 2015 about Cotard syndrome, and one of the people it tells the story of in the article is this woman, Esme Weijun Wang. And in 2013, she came to the conclusion that she was dead. According to the article, Wang lost consciousness during a long flight from London to San Francisco, and her doctors never found any explanation for the incident. But afterward, she began to experience increasingly strange symptoms of distress and disorientation, psychosis, losing her sense of reality. And about a month later, she woke up one morning with a new consciousness of her situation, and now I'm going to quote from the article, a quote she gives to them, quote, "I was convinced that I had died on that flight, that I was in the afterlife and hadn't realized it until that moment," said Wang, now 32, who is convinced her husband and their dog Daphne were dead as well. And then her quote continues, "That was the beginning of when I was convinced that I was dead, but I wasn't upset about it because I thought I could do things in my life over and do them better."
Hmm.
But her condition did worsen from there. So Wang wrote an essay called Perdition Days that she posted online about her experience. And I read this and I really recommend reading it because it's a really interesting and I would say very well written description of what it's like first person to have this kind of experience. So in the essay, she describes how when she first discovered she was dead and living in some sort of afterlife, she felt happy. But this soon decayed into a state of misery where she began to believe that she was living in a form of perdition, which is a state of punishment or hell. And she writes, quote, "During the perdition days, which had no rhythm to them, I could not summon the motivation to do anything. I would not eat. I often would not move. I would not attempt to read or answer an email or have a conversation because there is no point in doing anything when in perdition. Instead, there is only horror and a physical agitation that refuses to manifest physically for a lack of motivation."
But it does line up with these other examples we've looked at, the sense that it's not merely waking up and saying, oh, I think I'm dead.
Mm-hmm.
It's this, you feel at odds with everything in your world.
Yeah.
Like, again, kind of getting into that negation of everything, that ultimate nihilism, though that almost puts too defined a definition on it, you know? Like, it seems like it's basically, again, it comes down to you're left with this just inhuman feeling, and you have to make something human out of it, or attempt to, with what you had to work with.
Yeah, so it's obvious that these cases, and by the way, I do recommend that the listeners read this essay, Perdition Days, because I think it's really good.
Cool, we'll include a link to that, as well as the other interview on the landing page for this episode at stufftoblowyourmind.com.
But also, I think we should be asking the question of, well, wait a minute, if what you're just saying is true, Robert, you know, there's this problem with this collection of symptoms being kind of only very vague and loosely associated, while certainly very real.
Mm-hmm.
Are we talking about one coherent thing when we talk about Cotard's delusion, or instead are we fabricating the connective tissue that's holding all these cases together?
Yeah, so this is something that really throughout the history of Cotard's delusion or Cotard syndrome, you see time and time again. Is it a true syndrome?
Yeah.
Or is it just a delusional state that emerges from various other conditions?
Now, we're certainly not questioning the reality of the experiences of the individual mm-hmm. people having this these experiences, but what are we saying? Is it one thing?
Right.
Or are these different things that we're trying to group together under the same heading?
Right. So it's kind of like, in a broad sense, you have hallucinations.
Mm-hmm.
But there are various forms of hallucinations, and there are myriad reasons for why one would experience a hallucination. So is this a case where Cotard's delusion is simply something that emerges due to various causes.
Well, one thing,
and I think there's a strong case to be made for that.
Okay, yeah. Well, one thing we could do to sort of help unify our understanding of it is to look at the cause and effect situation. Has there been a cause isolated by the researchers who work on this? Is there something they can point to say, yeah, we think when we see Cotard, this is the most likely cause?
Well, based on the resources I was looking at, there a number of researchers seem to think that it boils down to misfirings in the fusiform face areas of the brain.
Now, what is that?
So these are areas involved in facial recognition, as well as, and also misfirings in the amygdala, which matches emotional response to all those faces. So again, we're getting back to that idea of the brain's ability to deal with self, to deal with identities, and to then attribute appropriate emotional responses to those identifications.
So how would this be managed? So if you're having trouble recognizing faces and feeling the correct emotional reactions to them, how would this manifest as a belief that one was dead or had lost your existence or identity?
Well, you can think, like, one way to think of it is to think of use of a mirror. And again, this is not saying that Cotard's delusion depends on an individual looking in a mirror.
Yeah.
But if you're experiencing a lack of emotion in viewing faces, and a resulting detachment, and then you view your own face in a mirror, well, then that could lead to this startling detachment between your sense of self and the projected self in the mirror. So in short, you cease to see yourself as you. You do not exist. It's kind of like the Medusa staring into the, being confronted with the mirror.
Yeah. Right? Do you just feel that you have turned to stone?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.
So one thing I came across when reading about this is that there seem to be a wide range of different treatment options that have been tried. The Washington Post article I mentioned earlier spoke with a psychiatrist named Jesus Ramirez Bermudez at the National Institute of Neurology and Neurosurgery in Mexico, and he says he's treated at least 14 patients with Cotard's delusion using a combination of medication and psychotherapy.
Yeah, and that seems to be the situation you run across, that coming back around to the idea that Cotard syndrome, again, has not, it's a battery of symptoms that emerge from from different causes. And so, you know, you can't really treat the symptoms. You can try and control the symptoms, mm-hmm. but it's going to vary, depending on what is actually causing them and whether that's being addressed or not. So you see antidepressants, antipsychotics, and even electroconvulsive therapy resulting in some benefits from time to time.
Now, when we mentioned disorders of the recognition of faces, this does seem related to another type of delusion I've read about before, the Capgras delusion.
Yeah. And this is one that I've at least written about in the past. I can't remember if I've done any podcast content on it. I think maybe Josh and Chuck have.
Oh, yeah.
It's a delusional identification syndrome, which generally involves right brain anomalies linked to a number of illnesses and neurological disorders, ranging from schizoaffective disorder and Alzheimer's disease to severe head injuries, pituitary tumors, and migraines. Even alcoholism can play a role, but it basically entails the experience of doppelgangers, thinking that basically you encounter individuals in your life, maybe they're even family members, but suddenly you see them, but there's this mix up in identity. So yeah. You see them, but you think they are not themselves. You think that, and then if you try and make sense of that, well, they have been replaced. These are replicants.
Yeah. That's how I've heard it explained, mm-hmm. is that, you recognize the person, but you don't think they're really them.
Yeah.
You know, my family has been replaced by imposters.
Yeah. So there definitely seems to be some strong connective tissue between these two scenarios. Again, getting back to that idea that it's a disruption of the ability to process self and identity. Now, in 1995, researchers G.E. Berrios and R. Luke presented three different possible categorizations for Cotard's delusion, and this was following their analysis of 200 publications concerning Cotard's mm-hmm. syndrome or delusion. So they said, one, there's psychotic depression, and this includes patients where there's this overhanging sense of melancholy, and in these nihilistic delusions emerge. And then there's Cotard type 1, they said, which includes patients that represent a clear case of Cotard syndrome, but more specifically, the delusion is prominent in comparison to the depressive picture that we already mentioned. And then there's Cotard type 2, a mixed group, and this is where the patients demonstrate anxiety, depression, and even auditory illusions as well. Hmm. So basically the take home here is that if you start breaking it down, it's not even that Cotard's delusion or Cotard's syndrome is like one set of thing. You know, it may be three different things. It's kind of depending on, it's a battery of symptoms, and that exact battery of symptoms will differ from one patient to another.
Seems like it might be kind of a working theory, like a working categorization technique.
Yeah, I think so. Because overall, the delusion has been reported as a symptom or again, a battery of symptoms in a number of different underlying conditions, including migraine, neoplasms of the parietal cortex, cerebrovascular disease and epilepsy, trauma, acute toxic phase of typhoid fever, multiple sclerosis.
Wow. Yeah, again, with such a range of causes and such a range of different specific presentations, it makes me wonder yet again, is this really one thing?
Yeah, and I think the case is very strong that it is not. This is something that emerges from various conditions.
One thing this makes me think about, and I've mentioned it a couple of times so far, is the role of beliefs in the formation mm-hmm. of delusions. We mentioned it with the Wandering Jew and with the idea of perdition. So there's sort of like the hardware versus software formulations of brain function, right? So if you imagine hardware is the physical and chemical activity of the brain, and mm-hmm. the software are your thoughts and beliefs. When I read literature about mental conditions or any disorder of the brain, it often seems theorized in terms of hardware malfunction.
Right.
There is some kind of malfunctioning of the hardware of the brain that is producing negative effects in the software.
Right.
But I keep thinking about the way the software feeds back into how the hardware works. Like, again, the things we mentioned so far. One thing I thought was interesting in Wang's essay, she mentions that she came to believe that she was living in perdition, even though she had never been a Christian.
Hmm. But that was still apparently that was still obviously a script that was available to her.
Yeah.
It's kind of like individuals who experience some sort of supernatural occurrence, paranormal event, and then they have to make sense of it. So they have a few different scripts they can go to if they want.
Yeah. Another experience that I think is interesting here in terms of how this reads on beliefs is the reports of people sort of recognizing the illogical nature of what they're being told and yet being unable to stop believing it.
Yeah.
Like when people say, I'm dead, and someone says to them, but you're walking around and you're talking. Dead people can't do that. It seems that some of these people who experience Cotard's delusion, they recognize that. They're like, oh, yeah, you know, that's true that dead people can't walk around and stuff, but yet it is a fact that I'm dead. Like, that is a primary, prima facie conclusion.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's not just a situation where you can talk somebody out of it.
Yeah.
It is interesting to think of it in terms of the hardware, software, because there are these clear cases where it's like, all right, clearly there's damage to the brain, some sort of trauma occurred, stroke-like scenario, et cetera, and then that messed up the software. But in other cases, it seems like it might be pure software, such as the case of the Iranian man who thought he was a wolf, you know?
Yeah, I don't know.
Not to say there's not some potential physical trauma going on there as well that was either underreported or not reported, but still.
You know, one of the scariest and most troubling things about this delusion is that in some forms of it, it seems like medical science is having difficulty helping people. In other cases, people do seem to have been able to get treatment that achieved a positive conclusion. In Wang's essay, again, she talks about meeting with her doctors and feeling despair at the idea that they really didn't have any way that they could cure this. Mm-hmm. They were just talking about, like, well, how much of her life would she have to live feeling these heightened states of psychosis as opposed to relatively milder periods. And that's just such a horrible thing to have to be told. I mean, and not like it's the doctor's fault.
Right.
But I would hope that this is something that we can make progress on. You know, when people talk about curing diseases, about medical progress in curing diseases, they're almost always talking about somatic illnesses,
mm-hmm.
People having, you know, cancer or other problems. And of course, those are worth addressing too. But I think it's really important to help keep up hope for the alleviation and curing of mental illnesses.
I agree. So, hey, that's it for this episode. But we know that this probably stirred a number of thoughts from our listeners. And, hey, it's not impossible that somebody out there listening to this has second or even firsthand experience with Cotard's delusion. So if you have, get in touch with us. We would love to hear from you. If you want to learn more about Stuff to Blow Your Mind, if you want to check out past episodes of the podcast, check out some videos, blog posts, etc., head on over to stufftoblowyourmind.com. You'll also find links out to our social media accounts there, such as Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram. If there is a particular social media thing that you use, seek us out there. Follow us. And another great way to support the show is, hey, wherever you listen to us, if there's an ability to rank us, to give us a star rating, leave some feedback, leave us some positive feedback, leave us an absurdly high star rating. That helps out the algorithms and helps out the show.
Yeah, be sure to lie about how great we are.
I mean, you know, be truthful, but then just go above and beyond, because you got to make up to the other people who are lying.
So, right, you know. A lot of naysayers out there.
Yeah, you just got to balance it, and the only way to balance it is to give us 5 stars. That's just fact.
Of course, we only want the most honest feedback. Anyway, of course, if you want to get in touch with us, as always, to let us know topics you might want us to cover in the future, or feedback on this episode or any other, or responses to any of the prompts we asked you in this episode, you can always email us at blowthemind@howstuffworks.com.
The For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Hey, guys. Back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah. And some waves. So we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that.
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in.
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it.
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby.
Wait. Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
Xfinity has free premium networks for everyone this month, no matter what kind of entertainment you love. Addicted to true crime? Catch killer cases and more spine-tingling shows on A&E Crime Central. Crave adventure? Explore Asian action movies on Hayah. Searching for something extreme? Check out skating, snowboarding, and more on Fuel TV Plus, the global home of action sports. And find crowd-pleasing bops on iHeartRadio's Hit Nation playlist. There's new free shows and movies to love every week. Say free this week in your Xfinity voice remote.